Hey, thank everybody for their sharing. You know, the whole idea of a workshop, you know, it's not like I'm instructional here and this is what you should do and how you should do it. You know, that's why this thing about choices, it's about your choices and the choices that you are comfortable with. And that's why I enjoyed everybody sharing, because we're all at a different place. And I think about, you know, people that are living with active alcoholism, people that are living with sobriety, people that have death as a result of alcoholism. You know, we're all in very different places. And that's when I think about a program, it's just that the program, there's your program, you know, and that's where you are in your program. And the only way I know to grow is to be know where I am in my program and know, you know, that I can improve on it. But, you know, I don't work my sponsor's program. I don't work Yvonne's program, you know, or Juanita's or whatever. I benefit from their programs because they share their experience, strength, and hope. But I can only apply what will work for me at the time that it'll work for me. You know, it's just like, you know, if you want 38 years in Al-Anon, you got to do 38 years. It's just the way it goes. I wish there was a shorter, you know, shortcut. I wish we could whack you with the Serenity wand and get on with it. But, you know, you have to have your own experience, and we grow at our own rate and pace, which to me is an absolutely marvelous thing. But it's important for me, again, to know the choices that if I want to stay stagnant, I can stay right here. And sometimes moving on, it's painful. But, it, you know, again, once I get through that part of it, it's an amazing journey. Okay, so I'm going to kind of speed through these a little bit faster than I did the first. I always think, oh, I have nothing, and then I talk forever. So chapter four is we begin to know ourselves. And I, again, just selected some of the paragraphs out of here that I want to read to you. It says, the Al-Anon program asks us to keep our attention on our own lives and detach with love from the drama and turmoil created by alcoholism. When we first hear these words, the meaning may escape us. Old feelings of anxiety might arise, but we don't have to hold on to these fears. Guided by the Serenity Prayer, we can find some stability when we detach from what we can't control and sharpen our focus on what we can change within ourselves. Through sharing our struggles with other Al-Anon members, we can begin to gain some perspective on our problems and some detachment from our self-centered dramas. When we begin to listen to other members share honestly about themselves, we can reflect on our own situation. We have the opportunity to become more aware of how we feel in the present moment. When we're caught in negative thoughts about someone else's problem drinking, gratitude for anything, much less gratitude for anything about ourselves, may be the last thing we feel we have time to consider. But taking 5 minutes to begin a gratitude list is an excellent first step in a time of crisis. Starting a gratitude list puts the focus on ourselves, even if only for a short while. It also puts the negative aspects of our situation into a broader framework that also includes positive factors. Writing a gratitude list can be the beginning of a lifelong process of learning how to see our lives in a more positive light. It only takes a few minutes to start, but ultimately it can have profound effects. Our gratitude list will keep growing the more we add to it. When we adopt an attitude of gratitude, there is less room in our lives for self-pity, control, and despair. If we are no longer trying to change others, it is possible to see the good qualities they have to offer. And when I think about gratitude, that was like one of the, you know, again, my foundation here through my sponsor was, you know, I mean, I should have a dime for every time that woman said to me, Larcine, you need an attitude of gratitude, you know, because I was never grateful when I got here. I just wasn't. And because, again, if you'd had my life, if you grew up, you know, in the drunken family that I did with all the fear and crap that went along with that, you know, and then you marry an alcoholic. I mean, how bad is that? And I'm supposed to be grateful. You know, where is God in all of this? If he's watching over me, he's doing a pretty crappy job. You know, and again, all these things that that I bring to a sponsor. And but she was huge on gratitude all the time. And no matter what was going on in my life, she would make me look for what to be grateful about, which just irritated the bejeebies out of me. Because it's hard to really complain when you're complaining about something and then all of a sudden your sponsor has you, what to be grateful for in the situation. And the story I always like to tell about Jeannie and gratitude is, like I said, no matter what was going on in my life, she would make me turn it around and, you know, and what was there to be grateful for in this effort. And one day, you know, I'm early days in Al-Anon and my kids are little. I got two little boys, you know, they're maybe like six and, you know, five at that point. And, you know, my husband and I'm the only girl in the family. And so, you know, I go in to clean the bathroom, and of course I go to the toilet, you know, and there's, and again, I got three guys in my house. Sometimes I don't need to tell you what a toilet looks like when you have three guys in your house, but I'm the one that cleans the house, you know, so why does this fall upon me? You know, this is not good. And so I go, so I think I'm going to call Jeannie, you know, see what I have to be grateful for about this messy toilet. And so I call Jeannie and I tell her my resentment, you know, about having to clean up after these guys, and, you know, and it's not fair, you know, why do they miss all the time? I never miss. I mean, I think it's a big target, but, you know, what's going on here, and what should I be grateful for? And I remember she did not miss a beat, you know. I mean, I'm just thinking, what can she possibly come up to be grateful for about this? And she said, you can be grateful that all the guys in your house have healthy penises. You know, now that never, ever positively would not have occurred to me, you know, but then that's when I surrendered to her again, one more time. It's just like, and that's always how it gets. I think I'm going to beat her down. And why that becomes necessary for me, I don't know, because I always need proof, need proof, need proof. And, but I'm always beating my sponsor down. And, but she always comes back to me with this loving thing. You know, and I, so when I said, like, okay, Jeannie, why do you always want me to find the gratitude in everything? And she said, simply, Larsine, because, again, you have a choice here. You have so many things to be grateful for. And because of how you've been affected by the disease of alcoholism, you refuse to look at that. And when you refuse to look at the things you have to be grateful for, then the family disease of alcoholism wins. You might as well be the drinker in your house when you're walking around with that attitude. Always what's wrong, always what's not right with this. No matter how much good stuff you have, she would tell me, you have healthy children, you have a husband that's sober, you know, you got a roof over your head, you have a job, all of these things. That, and that, what do you want to look at? You want to look at a dirty toilet, you know? And again, the truth to me, that's what Al-Anon is all about, what it continues to be about. You know, when we talk about when we begin to know ourselves, it's about knowing what the truth is. Because the family disease of alcoholism wants you to live in the lie that it's your fault, that you're not good enough, that you don't deserve good things to happen to you. And again, where that all comes from or how that all manifests itself, you know, again, I'm not a psychiatrist or any of that kind of stuff. I don't pretend to be. But I will tell you that those are all the feelings that I have had in my life, you know, and sometimes that will still, you know, roll back around to me no matter how long I'm here if I am not implementing the tools that I have been given. And gratitude to me is just like the number one thing. You know, when I talked earlier about my sister dying, you know, I mean, how can you possibly find gratitude in that? You know, but it wasn't about that. It was about all the things that came around as a result of that, about being loved. At that time, Carol was my sponsor, and Carol's sponsor was Winnie Eddy, who was, you know, just this most wonderful woman, you know, in Al-Anon. And she talked all over the country, and my sister was killed in Oregon, in a small town called Medford. So my mom and I had to fly up there. And of course, it's a little town. We know nobody. But I talked to my sponsor. My sponsor talked to her sponsor. And so Winnie had somebody that she knew because she'd been to Oregon to speak, you know, who met me and my mom and took us to the morgue where we had to identify my sister, and took us to a motel and got us all settled in. You know, and again, it's just like, and more than any of that, this is a woman who was my mom's age at the time, and my mom, who has no program and was devastated by my sister's death, as was I with the program. I mean, death is death. It's an icky thing. But this woman that was in Al-Anon that meant us comforted my mom in, you know, in a way that I could not. You know, and again, you know, my gratitude for that is absolutely phenomenal. And I don't always see it when it's happening, you know, but the fact that, you know, when you're witness to it, it's a whole different deal, you know, and I got to be witness to it and I got to be present. And if Al-Anon, you know, again, what's my gratitude is I get to be present for the stuff that is currently going on in my life. And I get to look at what's the truth that's happening here, what is really going on. And with that, then I can move on and live in the present moment, which is, like, to me, the most important spot to be. And alcoholism always robs me of that. You know, it's just like, not being able to find the gratitude in what's going on in the moment. Well, you can't. How can I appreciate anything that's happening right around me when I'm thinking about what my tasks are in front of me? If I'm going to have enough money for this, is that going to happen? Is this going to happen? I'm in that worry and I'm doing all of that stuff instead of being in this present moment about where we are right now. We can talk about that with this pandemic, you know, because what's the ultimate answer? I mean, every day on the news, it's still, is it a month? Is it going to be the whole year? Is it 1920 or 2021? Now I'm here in 2022. I mean, these answers just get so big and so phenomenal, you know, and the thing is that there isn't an answer right now. It's all this question mark. But if I look at the right here and the right now, what's going on with me, you know, and stuff like that, right here, right now, what's going on with me is there is a scary thing going on in the world, but it's the same token, you know, I have a roof over my head. I have food to eat. I have friends that I can talk about my fears with. And believe you me, I have them. You know, some days I handle this better than other days. And again, I can't put my finger on exactly what's going on. But again, it has to do with my spiritual condition. What's the truth? Am I living in fear or am I living in the reality of what is happening right at the moment? And if I look at right at the moment, everything right at this moment is okay. There's no need for me to panic or go anywhere else with it. You know, if you tell me I'm going to be stuck in this house with my husband for 2 years, there's a problem. Okay. That's just going to be a big problem. And there's no amount of prayer that's going to get me through thinking 2 years, just him and I. And it's not that I don't love him. It's not that we don't get along, you know, all of that stuff is just fine, but I couldn't be 2 years. I don't know that I could be 2 years in the house with my higher power all by myself and be okay. I mean, again, it's, I have to live in what's going on right now. And what's going on right now is that my husband and I give each other space. You know, he needs his time. I need my time. And we're, you know, in a 1200 square foot house, there's plenty of room for him to do what he needs to do and what I need to do. And as long as we keep respecting that, it's okay. And it's not all about me and it's not all about him. It's about all of us. And again, that's the perspective and the gratitude that I get to learn from that. He's doing the best he can too. Why should I not think he isn't? But let me tell you, some days, if I have to hear him eat one more time, I am going to kill myself, okay? And I don't know why it's bugging me so much, but, you know. But I never think that how I eat bothers him because I am a very good eater. And whatever, you know, where does this crap come from? Again, information from nowhere lands here, becomes fact for me. Because right now, I'm scared about what's going on. And so instead of just admitting to that, I'm going to go to, I don't like the way my husband's chewing his food. You know, that's how I deal with stuff. And that's a lie. It's nothing to do with what's going on. It's my defensive mechanism. So one more time, it's kind of like, I need to know myself. No, Arsene, what's really happening? You're bugged by what's going on. You want to blame someone else for it. Why? Because that's what I am hardwired to do. That's what I know I am hardwired to do. But one more time, I just bring it back. You know, what's really happening here? It's going to be okay. Chapter 5 is recognizing that a better way is possible. And it says, as we recover from the effects of alcoholism, we begin to notice that our feelings provide information that can help guide our actions, regardless of how we judge those feelings. Feelings are not positive or negative. It is our reactions to them that make us consider them so. When we pay attention to the particular feelings we have, we can begin to learn from them and bring our attention back to the simplicity of the present moment. Many of us are afraid that the past will repeat itself. We base future expectations on our difficult past experience. This belief can be a great source of pessimism and anxiety for us, even though we're not really in any position to know for sure what the future will bring. Only a higher power could know that. Our certainty that a negative past will repeat itself, however, can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. We don't have to cling to negative beliefs such as things never just work out for me. Instead, we can let go and let God. How we react to our feelings is ultimately a choice. Almost everyone has some discouragement or disappointment in relationships with other people. That's not a reason to conclude that there is no hope for something better. We have the opportunity to make amends when we've made an error and the freedom to learn a positive lesson from a negative situation. The recognition that we have choices opens the door to hope. Hope that despite the effects of alcoholism on our lives, we can find a more positive way of relating to other people. Once we realize that we are not permanently blocked by these negative effects, we can admit that there is a range of other possibilities. even if we don't yet know what those positive possibilities could mean for us. We can begin to open our eyes to the many resources in Al-Anon available to help us broaden our vision. And recognizing that a better way is possible. You know, I think about when my husband was 25 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, he was diagnosed with Hep C and ended up with cirrhosis of the liver as a result. You know, so at 25 years sober, I was certainly not expecting, you know, my husband to have cirrhosis of the liver and then all the health problems that ensued. And he was really, really sick when he was diagnosed with the Hep C. I mean, he'd lost a ton of weight. He had a thing called ascites. I think that's how you say it. You know, his stomach was filling up with fluid. And so he had to go on an interferon treatment. And back again, this is, you know, I guess about maybe 15 years ago, something like, or no, well, I think right around 15 years ago, that because he's 25. Yeah. So it would be 15 years ago that this happened. And all the only treatment they had was the interferon, you know, and the interferon was very, very rough on him. And it affected him emotionally, you know, in many ways, because of, you know, again, you're just not expecting something like that to happen. It was a huge, scary time for me. And I want to tell you, in those huge, scary times for me, I go right back to, you know, is there a God? You know, why is he doing this? Why do I think there's always a lesson I'm supposed to learn? So God wants to teach me a lesson. So he's going to do something to my husband, you know, and again, how my mind works because of the, you know, again, how I've been taught by the family disease of alcoholism to think, you know, and for not being an alcoholic, I sure make it be about me a lot. You know, it's, oh, I don't know why. I don't ever see that, but I certainly, it always comes down to this is all about me and how it's going to affect me. And anyway, it was just a really, really scary time for me. And I was struggling with it. But you know, one of the things, like I say, my sponsor, an attitude of gratitude, you know, I mean, she pounded that into me like no one's business. And so, and subsequently, I try and pound it into the people that I sponsor as well, you know, because it is, you have to find the gratitude. Otherwise, your day is just it's just a pisser, you know, if you don't find the stuff to be grateful for. But I remember I was really struggling. And so Butch has to do these interferon treatments, and it required him to have to give himself an injection. And I was willing to give the injections to him, but for some reason, he didn't really trust me with a needle. I don't know why, but he didn't really want me to be the one poking him in his stomach and all that stuff when he had to have the shots. But it was very discouraging for me. And as he was doing the interferon and it altered his personality, and things were going on, it became more and more difficult. And I remember talking to one of the new gals that I was sponsoring. I was having such a hard time, and she was calling me with her problem of the day. We were into it, and I wasn't really paying much attention because I was so discouraged. And I even she as a new person could tell I just wasn't there for, you know, listening to what she was saying to me. And so she asked me what was going on, And so I, you know, I told her, you know, it's just upsetting. You know, my husband has to give himself these shots, and it's just awful, and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And here's my new person, you know, who, you know, and she goes, and so she turns around to me and gives me what I'd given her the whole time. She goes, well, let's see what we can be grateful for in this situation. Of course, I want to reach through the phone and grab her little throat and choke it. But, you know, but then she said to me, you know what? She goes, didn't you tell me Butch tried to be a heroin addict once? And I go, yes, he did. And she goes, well, isn't it good that he did that? Because now he knows how to use a needle. You know, who knew that was going to come in handy? You know, and I'm saying, left to my own devices, I never would have thought about being grateful that for that, that led to this. You know, but in reality, I had to start laughing, you know, because it's absolutely positively. He knows how to use a needle. He knows how to fill one up. He knows how to stick it in his body, you know, and he didn't have to take any classes for it or anything else like that. But in desperate times, it calls for desperate gratitude sometimes, you know, and we have to grasp for whatever it is that we can grasp for. And that becomes to me just the most paramount thing in the world is what can I get at, you know, and that thing about making a gratitude list. Again, when I came to Al-Anon, I thought it was the hokiest thing in the world. You know, what's going to be on my gratitude list? I'm grateful for my children, you know, and after that, you know, it was kind of downhill from there for me. because it was, I couldn't find anything to be grateful for. If you had the life I had, you wouldn't be grateful either. But again, what the family disease of alcoholism doesn't want me to see, you know, even living, even growing up in that house, there were good things that happened there. You know, I mean, I had, you know, my sisters who I love so much, you know, we were always super close. We were, you know, we loved each other. I had sisters, you know, that I loved very much. That's a wonderful thing to have happen. The family disease of alcoholism kind of wants to make that go away. But as little kids, we learned how to take care of each other. We could hug each other. We could comfort each other. Those are all good things. But the family disease of alcoholism never wants me to look on any of that kind of stuff. You know, we played together. You know, there was just so much stuff to be grateful for that I could never see before, that for whatever reason I never wanted to look at, because I had focused in my head what a horrible, horrible childhood I had. You know, and I know that there are people who have had horrible, horrible childhoods, and I am not trying to play that down by any stretch of the imagination. But I am here to tell you that I think God is in so many things, and we just don't always see that because we get so overwhelmed, as the reading says, about how this, you know, this bad stuff that happened is just going to keep repeating and repeating and repeating in our lives until we can no longer see the good that's going on, which makes it difficult to want to work these steps and do these things, because what's really going to change? Because I'm here to tell you, you can come to Al-Anon and the drinker will still keep drinking and people will still keep dying of the disease of alcoholism. And again, that's because we want to believe that that's what our ultimate outcome is what happens to them. The ultimate outcome from coming to Al-Anon is what happens to us, so that we can be there for those people, so that we can be there, so that when someone in the program loses someone they loved, the disease of alcoholism, which is happening right at this very moment, you know, for the people that we know that are being, having to be, you know, I'm talking about being irritated by a husband because of the way he's chewing his food, you know, when how many people are in there living with, you know, somebody who's drunk in the next room, stumbling, falling down, breaking things, yelling and screaming at them, you know. But again, my situation is always just a little bit worse than yours, because I know how to do that. I've been trained in the family disease of alcoholism, how to make my life look worse, you know, when in reality, another way to get grateful, think of others. That's amazing to me, thinking of others. I mean, you want to take your mind off of yourself? You know, that's on my gratitude list every day. I have so many friends in the program. I am so grateful for all of them. But they're not all, you know, but I know some of them are really, really struggling. You know, we have a really good friend in Al-Anon who just recently lost her husband. And it wasn't to the virus or anything, but boy, what an inconvenient time to die right now. It's really, really hard for people, you know, because you can't have funeral services, you know, you can't have people come over and hug you and do those things, you know. So there's people that are really going through some stuff right now. But, you know, again, I'm grateful that I can be there for them. I'm grateful I can text them. I can call them. I can send them cards in the mail. These are what I'm able to do. Can I make them whole again? It's not my job. And again, I have to remember over and over again, it's not my job to fix them. It's my job to be there for them. And that's all that I can do. I am here for you. I care about you. And you are not alone. But you are if you want to be. You know, and that's what I've learned for myself. I am absolutely alone if that is what my goal is to be. If I am just so much into feeling sorry for myself. And sometimes you need to. You know, sometimes you have every right in the world to be pissed off about something that happens. Sometimes people do really unkind stuff and or say really, really mean things. But my sponsor gave me a 10-minute limit. She goes, you go in the room and you be pissed off, you know, and you do your thing. But, you know, again, living, but that's the problem. You got 10 minutes and now it's time to get into the solution. Because in reality, I'm here to tell you, I cannot tell you how many years of my life are gone, never to be gotten back again, that I have spent being pissed. You know, and if that really gave me any reward, you know, I don't know what it is, you know, except for just, you know, fulfilling that family disease of alcoholism, because it wants you to stay in the anger. It wants you to stay justifiably angry. I always say justifiable anger is just as deadly to the Al-Anon as the first drink is to the alcoholic, because I will run with that. And it might be a day or 2 days or a week or whatever that run is going to be. And right now, I just don't have any more time to give up to all that anger. Because it answers nothing for me. You know, it's about what they're doing. It's not about what I'm doing. You know, have I done something wrong? If I have, there's steps. go through the steps. One, where am I powerless over this situation? You know, God help me to see my, you know, where I need to do whatever I need to do. You know, you, and then your third and your fourth, and figure out what it is, make your amends, and then move on with your life so that you can have a shot at happiness today. That is what it's all about. And so I am grateful every day for the opportunity that I get to have at being happy. Chapter 6, Risks and Rewards. When affected by alcoholism, our hopes for a loving relationship can bring us pain, disappointment, and loneliness. We tend to isolate ourselves from other people as we become absorbed in a situation that we find shameful and that we're convinced no one else understands. Without realizing how it all happened, we find ourselves vulnerable and afraid. In these circumstances, who would feel comfortable presenting themselves to a room of strangers? They already know each other, but we don't know them, and they don't know us. With a history of relationships gone bad, what reason would we have to believe that our relationship with these strangers could result in something positive? Paradoxically, Al-Anon meetings are for people who don't like meetings and who may even be fearful interacting with people. An Al-Anon meeting is a safe place where healing and recovery can begin. No one judges us at an Al-Anon meeting. Our social status or career accomplishments are irrelevant there. No one criticizes us or our mistakes. If I don't feel comfortable enough to share, we can simply say, I pass. Al-Anon works for us through a system of substitutions. We are encouraged to replace each painful thought with a more positive alternative. Hope replaces disappointment. Confidence replaces fear. Stubborn pride gives way to acceptance. Focus on ourselves replaces frustration with someone else. We learn to take care of ourselves, and in the process, we learn how to build better relationships with others. Whenever we come to an Al-Anon meeting, we know we are among people who understand. We can be ourselves, bringing all our struggles and triumphs with us, and be met by others who have had similar experiences. Through regular attendance, we stop being afraid of how the relationships in our lives define us, and we learn to accept ourselves and others exactly as we are. And when I think about this, you know, I want to talk about my son, Earl. When he was little guy, 12 years old, I came home from a meeting and he had taken acid. My husband was like, you know, I come home from an Al-Anon meeting, he's been in an AA meeting. I walk in the door and he's going, well, I got to tell you something, Earl dropped acid. Earl is 12 freaking years old, okay? I am freaked out of my mind. And, but my husband, again, who knew to be grateful for this, who has dropped acid, knows that, you know, he says, don't worry, there's nothing to be done about it. He's dropped the acid. So I gave him a glass of milk and he's listening to Mozart, which is apparently what you're supposed to do when that happens. I have no idea. But that was not my answer for sure. And I spent the whole night in the bedroom with Earl, you know, because he dropped acid, because I was so concerned about him, you know, just in his face all night long, talking to him. Apparently, this was a very bad acid trip for my son, because I guess being on an acid trip and having your mother in your face is not what you want to have happen when you're doing that. Apparently not fun at all. My son still even asked me when I'm going to make amends for that. And it's like, never, never. Okay. Just so y'all know, it's sponsor approved too. Okay. Not saying I'm sorry. And, anyway, it was just an absolute, and it started the roller coaster ride with this kid. And I shared about it right out of the gate at my meeting, but for whatever reason, I had in my mind that because his dad was an AA and I was an Al-Anon and he was only 12 years old and we caught this so early that it would just be over with, you know, it would just be a bump in the road and we would be on our way. But it wasn't just a bump in the road. You know, I watched my son isolate from me. I watched my son not be my son anymore. I don't even know how to describe it. It's almost like having your kid kidnapped. You know, he's still there, but they're not there. You know, the kid I know just wasn't there anymore. And it became really, really difficult for me because one more time, I thought there was something I could do to fix it. And that became my focus, you know, this having to fix him because he's my kid and I cannot risk him dying from the disease of alcoholism or dying from a drug overdose or just whatever. And but again, I think alcoholism, the family disease, how it affects me, the non-drinker, is so sneaky. It's just a sneaky little book. I just don't even know how to get around it, because those thoughts just creep in. They just creep in. If I do this, if I do that, you know, and before I knew it, I was back to yelling and screaming and ranting and raving and being an absolute lunatic, but not able to share that at meetings. And, you know, and you got to know at this point, you know, I'm like 10, 12 years into Al-Anon. I love Al-Anon. I'm working a program to the best of my ability, but I am not being truthful about my fear and what is going on with me. And I like in that time of my life, if you'd see me at a meeting, it's like we're all in the USS Serenity boat, right? And I got my line in the water, you know, and I look like I'm fishing like everybody else, working the program, trying to just do what I'm supposed to be doing. But what you cannot see is underneath my fishing line has been grabbed by my fear and my anxiety. And that line is so far off, so far, far away. And Larsine, how you doing? Fine. I'm good. Fine. Fine. You know, how's Earl? Oh, he's okay. You know, I mean, you know, blah, 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 because I don't want you to know, because I'm embarrassed. One more time, it's just like, what am I doing wrong? You know, and especially when you're going to meetings and you're there at meetings and then there's people who aren't working half the program you're working and they got sober freaking kids coming out the gazoo. Okay. It's like, how the heck does that happen? And again, it's my illusion that what I'm saying or how I'm acting or what I am doing is going to make this be different. And that's a lie. You know, the fact is that my son's alcoholism and drug addiction were just that. My son's alcoholism and drug addiction. It wasn't me. It wasn't what I wanted for this kid. It wasn't what I wanted to have happen. But one more time, that illusion of, he's a kid, though. See, my dad I couldn't control because he was my dad. My husband was a big guy. I couldn't control him. But your kid, you're responsible for your kid. You know, you got to do something about that. And I had no experience with that. And what does Al-Anon tell me to do? Because there's plenty of people, again, in the meeting who have that experience. It's a safe place. I can get that experience from people who have been through it. But first, I have to admit that I'm going through it. And that was so hard for me. It just was so hard for me. I probably went through the worst year of Al-Anon. That 1 year with my son when it was getting so, so bad with him. And my life was a piece of crap. That's all I can tell you. I was going to meetings the whole time acting like it wasn't, but my life was an absolute piece of crap. And did I feel frustrated at meetings? You betcha I did. Because all I wanted to hear from that podium was how to get him to stop drinking and do what you want him to do. I was right back to where I was when I first walked into the program. And I didn't even realize that it was happening to me. And I didn't realize it was happening to me until one night at home, I just exploded. I was breaking things, throwing things across the living room. I mean, it was absolute insanity. And I'm watching my sober husband look at me like, what is the matter with you? You know, and I remember getting in my car and just driving. And again, before cell phones and all of that other kind of stuff, and I found myself at my sponsor's house, you know, and then turning myself in. Just like I think the alcoholic has to turn themselves into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had to turn myself into Al-Anon. I have not been doing well with this. I am just killing myself trying to figure this thing out. And not only am I not helping my son, I am making a situation worse than it already is. And I'm making it worse on everybody in my family, my husband, my other son who is not an alcoholic, and then the son who is having all these problems. Who wants to be honest with me? Who wants to be who they are when all they know is this is what they're going to be met with, all this anger, all this frustration? And then the person I was hurting the most was myself. The person I was absolutely hurting the most. You know, and again, I didn't go to my sponsor and she said, oh, Larsine, you really screwed this up. This is terrible. This is whatever. This is, you know, we start from where we are. You know, yeah, Larsine, it's scary, but you don't have to do it by yourself. This is, you know, and this is the process we're going to do. And we're going to learn about unconditional love. And she started taking me down that path. So it would be okay for me to be with this kid. And he was doing what he was doing. And I got to do what I got to do so that I could be a loving mom. You know, one of the things she told me to do was, you know, he's still a kid. There were rules he had to live by and things he had to do. Now, with my kid, you know, I would say to him, you know, I know you've drank this or you're doing these drugs and blah. And he would, you know, get into this big thing and this, you know, about, no, I'm not. You're exaggerating. You're making it all big. And then he would say to me, well, Mom, didn't you have a glass of wine with dinner last night? You know, well, yes, I had a glass of wine with dinner last night. So the next thing I know, we're in a giant thing about I'm having a glass of wine with dinner. I'm an adult person. I don't have a problem with alcohol. I can have a glass of wine with dinner if I want. But now that's all we're talking about. You know, and we're not talking about him and what he's doing. And that's what alcoholism does. It turns it around and squishes it up so much, you know, that again, we're not focused on whatever. My issue is when I am armed with facts, boy, I will go in there and cram them down your throat. And I will keep talking to you and talking to you and talking to you until your eyes roll back in your head and you just automatically surrender just to shut me the freak up. And so my sponsor, she gave me direction that day. She says, you need to talk with Earl, and if he's doing something, you need to confront him about it. But you need to do it in 2 minutes or less. And I would go, so I learned to go into my son's room. You are under the influence. This is not acceptable. I don't want to hear about what you think or what you think I think. It's irrelevant. I want you to know that this is what I know. I don't know what I'm going to do about it at this particular moment. I may have to ask you to leave our house. I will make a decision, and I will let you know. But believe you me, when the time comes and I need to let you know that you need to go, you will have to go, you know, and that would be okay. And then, you know, and some days, you know, that's what I would think, and other days, but I never, again, what it says in our Al-Anon literature, don't make threats you don't intend to carry out, you know, and that's what brought me back. So for a lot of times I didn't, you know, there were consequences, and then my husband and I would agree on what those consequences were. And what happened is we got our life back. And my son did not get sober, not through any of that, not through any of his teenage years. He was like 36 years old when he finally got sober. But I learned how to live with that. And I learned how to be happy and have a good life as a result of, you know, and you want to talk about risks and rewards, because it's really risky. It's really, really risky putting my emotions and my feelings and everything else that I have wrapped up in this kid out on the line here. But the reality is that when I do that, I'm turning all of that over to him, you know, and that's so unfair to ask of, you know, your mom can only be happy if you're sober. You know, your mom will be happy if you're sober. That's a reality thing, but I can only be happy if he's sober. You know, what am I doing there? I'm getting one more time, turning my will and my life over to the care of an alcoholic and a drug addict. Not a good idea. You know, so what I got to learn again, one more time, pray for this kid. Pray for him. So with that, I'm going to go to the second set of questions here that you guys can peruse over these last three chapters. I'll put them up on the screen thing, and you can take a look at those, and then we can come back to sharing. So let me open up that page, and let me go to screen share. Sorry about that.
You want to do a 15-minute break, Lysine?
Whatever works for everybody is good for me. Okay, great. Hope share. Here we go. Ta-da! So thank you.
Thank you, Lysine. You guys, here are some questions. We'll be back at 11:20.